Welcome to False Flag Weekly News. I'm Kevin Barrett with Jeremy Roth-Cushell. And of course, Professor Anthony Hall is a member of our team as well. And we are back with a long list of news stories after our special last week about the amazing free speech battles that Tony and Jeremy are waging. So you can refer to that show to get all the information about those important issues. But let's look at the B'nai B'rith libelous attack on Tony Hall that just came out today as his academic freedom case is kind of reaching ahead at the University of Lethbridge, where there's a kind of a disciplinary procedure going on. And, you know, Tony is saying that this is all about a lynch mob driven by B'nai B'rith. And to confirm that, B'nai B'rith has put out yet another call to a lynching based on absolutely false and libelous statements, not only about Tony, but also about me. Jeremy, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, the way that they label you guys is really insincere and seems very falsifying. And I think I'll be interested in speaking to them about some of the research that I've done about the B'nai B'rith's history all the way back to the 1800s and the role of some of the leadership elements in relationship to the Confederacy. And there's a long history there, and it should be talked about and not just be tried to sloughed away by calling things bizarre. And then for the CEO of B'nai B'rith to say that Tony's just falling back on his anti-Semitic conspiracy theories after watching, you know, hours of Tony really documenting the deep background of what was done against him is really scandalous. So the B'nai B'rith should be ashamed, I think.
That's right. And I also don't appreciate the libel, the libelous label Holocaust denier. I'm not even a Holocaust revisionist, and I've never claimed that the various factual points under dispute regarding that story are one way or the other. So they better retract because you know, if I had the kind of money that they have, they would be in serious trouble in court. But let's move on to Larry Silverstein. Presumably, I believe he is a member of the B'nai B'rith in New York. I understand it. They have a huge, a very, very important Freemasonic lodge there in New York. And Larry's big World Trade Center bet is paying off, according to the Commercial Observer, a real estate publication in New York. Well, that's the understatement of the century. What do you think, Jeremy? Double indemnity. He put down $15 million of his own money and $100 million of his friends and received an instant, almost instant, 2 months later. He buys the place. He doubles the terror insurance. 2 months later, on his $15 million, he gets $4.5 billion plus complete rights to rebuild and own the place. The man got rich on 9/11, and he bragged about being, or at least admitted, being part of the decision to conduct the controlled demolition of Building 7, meaning he was also undoubtedly part of the team that blew up the towers and murdered 3,000 people, a self-confessed conspirator and murderer and traitor, and his big bet paid off.
I mean, you know, things like motive, cui bono, follow the money, there are limitations to those things, but sometimes they are so glaring that it's just wild. I mean, so the timing of the real estate transfer, some of his compatriots, so-called, in that, Frank Lowy, the former Israeli commando, and then the Sunday conversations with one Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, who said that 9/11 was good. That was his first instinct. There's a lot of issues here, and so any New Yorkers who, you know, were there for September 11th, let's deal with some reality here in terms of, you know, a decade and a half over of denial. And I mean, this is ongoing. Mass murder has no, there's no statute of limitations. And then the ongoing treason that set this country into endless war, and there's stories later on in terms of Guantanamo that show really what the full consequences of this are beyond the lower Manhattan, although that was the epicenter of it.
Well, let's mention, let's not forget that Larry managed to collect double indemnity after he had already doubled his terror insurance when he bought the place 2 months before 9/11. 9/11 happened. He didn't show up for his usual breakfast on top of the North Tower. If he had, he'd be dead. He just remembered an appointment with his dentist at the last minute. Well, then shortly thereafter, he's in court asking for double indemnity. He's doubling his already doubled insurance payoff by claiming that there were two utterly and completely separate and utterly and completely unrelated terrorist attacks, namely the one supposedly on the North Tower and the one on the South Tower. And he won that. He got his money doubled in a mobbed up Zionist courtroom. This is insane stuff. I urge people to research it if they haven't already.
Let's move on. Should be pointed out that B'nai B'rith is picking on Tony for pointing out the obvious connection between Jewish nonprofit organizations and charities and things like the Islamophobia industry. And it should be pointed out that Larry Silverstein and his wife are deep into the United Jewish Appeal, which is a key institutional player in the long history of supporting the Israeli security state.
All right. Well, Iran is one place where you can tell the truth about this stuff. I was on Press TV today telling some hard truths. And this Iran Project article that came out a little while back in our next slide discussed the plans for 9/11 action in Iran. Iran is shaking its head and rolling its eyeballs and not knowing what to do about this insane court case where the Zionists are trying to pin 9/11 on Iran with absolutely zero evidence, and they may be pushing back by pushing for 9/11 truth.
Yeah, this is a good beginning here to begin to push back and point at other much more likely perpetrators of September 11th, such as elements of Israel.
And the Israeli intelligence people pretty much admit that they are criminals. Of course, there are some American and other intelligence people that also admit such things. In our next slide, we see the former Israeli Mossad chief, Tamir Pardo, who is credited with preventing Netanyahu's long-desired war on Iran when he was Mossad chief from 2011 to 2015, says that he loved being in the Mossad. It was great fun because it offered a license to crime, which means a license to kill. He got to be a murderer and get away with it. He could murder Iranian scientists. He could murder Palestinian resistance people. He could murder people. And it was fun because he could get away with it.
Yeah, this is the new version of James Bond, Israeli style, license to crime, especially when you have a crime minister linked into Lower Manhattan on September 11th and Larry Silverstein and this long history that you're talking about killing scientists. But then even more, we're seeing even more just out of the Mueller investigation, a man who was part of the 9/11 cover-up in the wake of September 11th. But it's so blatant, the license to crime, that you're seeing Israeli intelligence in such crime aspects as influencing a foreign power, influencing a U.S. Election. And last thing is, Richard Silverstein here wrote this, says this was a difficult piece. He couldn't find any publishers for it. It's sort of interesting, some of his pieces that can't find publishers, and his split with Mint Press News actually came over an article that he wrote about the KGB high level in the Israeli government that had been found out. So I find it interesting, some of these articles that he has a hard time getting wide scale traction on.
Yeah, it's very strange. I'd love to have him on my show. I've invited him a couple of times. I think that he identifies strongly as a Jew, and in a sense, in a certain way, somewhat parallel to your take on these things, Jeremy, he thinks that the Jewish ethical tradition requires him to take these ethical stands. And, you know, I salute him. Well, moving on to the next slide, we have more license to crime. In this case, a license to make it a crime to fill Israeli soldiers when they're shooting helpless Palestinians lying on the ground point blank in the head. That was the incident that led to this new bill in the Knesset that's going to make it a crime to film Israeli soldiers while they're murdering people. And it was Elor Azaria, was the Israeli soldier who ended up having to be convicted of manslaughter, which is a bit of a wrist slap for shooting a helpless man lying on the ground point blank in the head. But he got filmed doing it. Most Israelis, the soldiers who murder Palestinians, including the hundreds of Palestinian children shot down for sport, never face even a wrist slap. But now it's going to be even harder to give him a wrist slap because you'll be arrested if you try to film them.
This is very authoritarian. He talks about just sort of like filming when it would create, you know, bad psychological approach for the IDF in the midst of their whatever they're doing. And it does look like that there's going to be a pushback to the guy in the position of the attorney general, who's also investigating Netanyahu's corruption, says that he thinks it's a no-go and that the Supreme Court in Israel will suppress it. Or we'll turn it back. But I mean, what's interesting now is like I would imagine there would be an escalation by these similar forces in the United States in relationship to, you know, bills of seditious intent to try to stop First Amendment approaches to boycott, divestment, sanction. But watch for things like even about the ability to do press work being suppressed by these kind of forces here in the so-called homeland.
Well, the Israelis have been shooting down unarmed protesters at the Gaza barbed wire fence, the edge of the world's biggest concentration camp, for a couple of months now, killing well over 100 and badly injuring many, many thousands. And now there are Palestinians who figured out a way to try to retaliate for these mass murders and maimings, and that is by sending burning kites across the border, which have started fires in Israeli fields. And the Israelis are, of course, freaking out about this kite war. And we're told that if Israel starts shooting down the kite flyers, Hamas may respond with rockets instead of kites, which, of course, are not horribly lethal for the most part, certainly not compared to what the Israelis are sending at Palestine. But that would be upping the ante a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this especially with the rise of the Likud government over the last decades, it's so become very obvious that the Israeli security so-called state is dependent on a long-term strategy of tension in relationship to their ongoing occupation and slow-moving genocide of the Palestinian people. And they need to maintain a certain amount of fear in their own Israeli population. And this type of stuff is a way that they love to make it seem as if they're pushing back against the evil Palestinian resistance fighters. And Gilad Atzmon at the end of our panel during the Deep Truth Forum about Zionism, we had gotten word that there had been some Israeli tech response to the dangerous kites. But it also shows that any type of asymmetrical warfare, when you're trying to perpetuate a long-term occupation of a people that are not going to give up their dignity, you're ultimately not going to be able to win.
And it does look pretty bad when the soldiers shoot down kids flying kites. So I think the kite war is actually a pretty good kind of asymmetrical warfare. The rockets, maybe not so much, just because even though these rockets are not very lethal, the idea of rockets, the image of rockets in public opinion, is a lot scarier than kids flying kites. So Palestinians do, of course, need to be thinking about these kinds of public relations issues as they wage their totally just struggle to completely liberate all of Palestine. Well, how about this Netanyahu thing? You mentioned earlier, Jeremy, that Netanyahu's got a whole long list of bribery cases against him. Case 4,000, case 3,000, case 2,000, case 1,000. That's like thousands of these. Well, I don't know. But anyway, you think he's going to survive this? I don't know.
It's hard to tell whether this is all theater or not. And even if it were not theater and he were going to be taken out by case 4,000 or 1,000, and 1,000 is the one that connects him to Arnon Milchan. And I guess his wife just got indicted yesterday or something like that. So this may actually have teeth. But my question is, even if it's not just theater, ongoing theater, who potentially is going to replace him? I my sense is it could be someone even worse, and that there's this sort of hard line approach on the right who are basically saying Netanyahu is not pro-settler enough.
Mm-hmm. And Netanyahu's base, though, is rallying to his support. Miki Zohar, a member of the Likud party, as the RT headline points out, he's invoking the supremacy of the Jewish race as he supports Netanyahu, saying that we're the master race; they can't touch us, they can't touch you, baby.
My gosh, dude. And at first he tried to deny that he said it, and then he's like, why do I have to apologize for pointing out the obvious? The Jews are, we're the chosen people, the special race. We can't be tricked. And actually that's what his point was that the Jewish people couldn't be tricked because the Jews are the supreme race on earth, chosen by God.
You know, honestly, Jeremy, I think the Jewish people more than any other people in a sense have been tricked and duped by the psychopathic element of their own leadership.
Read your translation from Yahweh to Zion by Laurent Guyonneau, and then get back to us, Israeli MP.
That's right. Well, I mean, it's true that the Jewish communities around the world tend to be pretty high in the educational ladder, but whether that means they can't be tricked is a whole nother story. How about Roger Waters demanding an apology from the mayor of Munich, who is throwing the usual slurs around, the same slurs that have been thrown at Tony Hall and us and everybody else. But Roger Waters isn't lying down and taking it. He's going after him.
Yes, this is the proper response, is to demand a legal retraction. These words are weapons. They're obviously used as weapons. They've been used as professional weapons against people like you and Tony. And they clearly have consequences. So to allow public officials to label private citizens these kind of weaponized words for core political speech, really core political stance that is highly moral, I would say, this is the proper response to this kind of illegitimate weaponized language.
So Israel is under fire on all sorts of fronts, and one of them is the Mueller investigation. According to the wife of George Papadopoulos, Papadopoulos was being investigated and possibly was going to be charged by Mueller as an unregistered agent of Israel. Wait a minute, if they make it a crime to be an unregistered agent of Israel, they're going to have to, you know, turn every Walmart in America into a concentration camp, not just that one in Texas that they're putting the Mexican kids into. They're going to have to stock those concentration camps with everybody from the White House, everybody from Congress, most of the people in our federal courts, almost our entire mass media. So I don't know. I don't think they're going to start prosecuting on that charge. What do you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, probably not. And it basically, there's not even a denial of it in a way. It's like, yes, he worked at the Hudson Institute. Again, I believe the Hudson Institute, highly funded by one Nina Rosenwald from the Gatestone Institute, from a long family of Jewish charities, and she is the queen mama of the Islamophobic hate industry, and so there's basically unabashed, some type of unregistered agent of Israel. But it's so interesting. We're more than a year into this Mueller thing, and this is finally starting to come out, how obvious. And it looks like that he had a relationship with Eli Groner, who had just been pushed out of the Netanyahu administration and got into a shouting fight with Netanyahu's wife. And then last thing, hearkening back to a story from a few weeks ago, it turns out that this meeting that had been set up with Papadopoulos, where an Australian diplomat had become aware that they were seeking information from Russians, had been set up by Israeli Foreign Service. So this whole Mueller-Russia investigation has Israel at its roots, obviously.
And another amazing story that broke this week about Israel was the parallel case to what Cynthia McKinney has described. She said that when she was elected to Congress, she learned that every incoming Congress critter is essentially forced to sign a pledge of loyalty to Israel, which, of course, is an act of treason. She refused to do it, and she got the Israel lobby on her case from that point on. Well, the White House also has to sign a pledge of loyalty to Israel's nuclear arsenal. Ever since Lyndon B. Johnson, the probable Sayanim, who helped murder Kennedy on behalf of Israel, among other forces, and then presided over the Israeli war of aggression, stealing the rest of the Holy Land in 1967. Johnson also helped Israel cover up its nuclear arsenal by signing this pledge that the Americans would never bother Israel about their nuclear arsenal, unlike JFK, who went to war against the Israeli nuclear arsenal and was dedicated to shutting it down, which is why they had to kill him. Johnson started this tradition of every president having to sign a document pledging that the U.S. wouldn't bother the Israelis and try to force them to get rid of their nuclear arsenal. And apparently the Trump administration never heard of this, and they were taken aback by it.
This is the core of the, you know, over 50 years of some of the worst things that that have happened in the United States, and also what has been created out of U.S. foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, but not just. If you think about the relations of the U.S. deep state and the CIA to the Israelis in terms of Iran-Contra and the funding and training of death squads throughout Central America, the Israelis recorded that too. And a lot of this is done under the guise of Israeli security. And during the Deep Truth Conference, I pointed out that I believe that this movement of the Samson option from a macronuclear through micronuclear terrorism in terms of things like September 11th potentially and the Bali bombing into the new Talpiot program, the domination of the world's databases, that this is where we have to watch out next. And is there going to be a secret contract for U.S. presidents to not disclose that tons of U.S. technology has been transferred through Israeli spying through Israel and out to a lot of the rest of the world, including China and Russia. And then last thing is it looks like they said that Ron Dermer, the Israeli ambassador, who I believe was American originally, he just walked in there into the White House sort of acting like he owned the place. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Just think about it, Jeremy. JFK goes all out against the Israeli nuclear arsenal. He gets blown away. And then every president after him has to sign a pledge to protect the Israeli nuclear arsenal. How much more obvious could it get? Michael Collins Piper is rolling over in his grave saying, how stupid can you people be not to see this? And let's not even get into Jack Rubenstein and all those people. Anyway, moving on to the Russian oligarchs, our favorite people. Oleg Deripaska's agent, Adam Waldman, has been visiting Julian Assange 9 times. What does that mean?
I don't know. It's very this is very strange. There's something very deep going on behind the scenes in terms of this Russia connection. And Deripaska appears to have even some type of connection to Christopher Steele, the MI6 producer of the dossier, of the Trump dossier. His firm had apparently had some connection with Deripaska. But Deripaska is also, you know, heavily Zionist, deeply connected to Israel, invested in Israel, Jewish background, tight friends with one Nathan Rothschild. And this Waldman guy, talking to Assange over and over in the run up, you know, actually this was after the election. It's very, very, interesting. And I don't know exactly what it means, but people should look into Deripaska, who was represented by Waldman, I believe, even when he, published in, Tucker Carlson's Daily Caller, an op-ed last year, I believe, or earlier this year. And one last thing is Deripaska is a billionaire based largely on the metals trade, and apparently is benefiting from some of the Trump approaches to tariffs on metals.
Okay, well, we'll have to post updates on this and see where it goes. Moving on to the war on Syria, we have before the war on Syria, last Israel story, my letter to the editor from last fall, I'm arguing is probably the hardest hitting anti-Israel, anti-Zionist letter ever published in a mainstream American publication. You think so?
I think so. And I'm glad to have seen this. I didn't see this when you first got it out there, but it really covers it makes a very strong argument, and it also covers the whole array. It includes the war on terror as manufactured Zionist policy, and then even references Gideon Paloya and his reference to how many millions of dead Semites of not of Jewish origin there have been from this impact of these Zionist wars.
All right. Well, I think we've covered slapping Israel around for the day, Jeremy. That'll teach B'nai B'rith to come after Tony Hall the way they just did those. Oh, by the way, PSA that we offered about the B'nai B'rith story attacking Tony, they include emails of people at the University of Lethbridge. So people should go to that, read the scurrilous attack on Tony, and be sure and email the University of Lethbridge and let them know that you support academic freedom. All right, moving on to the war on Syria. We have Russian-Syrian warnings of another chemical false flag. They all seem to work pretty well. And now we have the Harry S. Truman Carrier Strike Group with 6,500 American sailors in the region might be a target for a mega false flag.
Yeah, that it had been brought in apparently as a so-called response to the last false flag, whatever that was back in April, I think, and potentially or March, a hoax of some sort, it looks like, and they have not removed themselves. So then this is there's a sense that there's a staging going on for a new potential false flag.
And one person telling the truth about these things is Syrian President Assad. Whatever you say about him, he's at least one of the few world leaders actually telling the truth about false flags. And here he is saying that the Daesh or ISIS terrorists are supported by the UK, France, the US, and their puppets, which is, of course, God's absolute truth. And he should have mentioned the Israelis, of course, because Israel just bombed the anti-ISIS forces in Syria a couple of days ago. So I would say, and I don't think Israel qualifies as a puppet of the UK, France, and the US. I think it's kind of the other way around.
Yeah, it's sort of startling that Israel is not mentioned here. I mean, I guess I can understand that they're so close to him. They represent a real clear and present threat to him. But the absence of him speaking about them, as obviously this is the rolling back and this constructed chaos and death and destruction in Syria, is obviously some type of Zionist policy, whether it's the clean break program offered up to Netanyahu by the most extreme of the American neocons. It looks like this is a program, a Zionist program. And so I think it should be more identified as such by Assad. And last thing is, I think it's interesting to look in the background in terms of the Ba'ath Party. And where there was the origination of the Ba'ath Party before it got turned into the Ba'ath Party of Assad's father and of Saddam Hussein, which is in many ways maybe a CIA corruption of the origination, was really a pan-Arab ecumenical approach to Arab nationalism that got, I believe, twisted and weaponized.
Okay, moving on from the war on Syria to the war on Yemen. Hodeidah is under massive attack by Saudi and Emirati forces. They're making the situation for ordinary Yemenis even worse than it already was. This genocide is intensifying there. It's absolutely disgusting. It's totally supported by the U.S. and the usual suspects.
Yes, and the connections to the White House in terms of the UAE and Saudi in relationship to the Israelis as the sort of main foreign influencers directly documented in terms of influencing the White House is most violently, becomes most violently implicative and obvious in Yemen, and this massive human catastrophe. Both in terms of the direct war consequences, but also in terms of the destruction of infrastructure and the overwhelming the hospitals and the cholera. Basta.
So this is a Saudi Emirati attempt to colonize Yemen, and it's a war of aggression. And the human rights issues are so far off the charts that the whole country is dying. And now we have reports that the Emirati officers are engaging in mass sexual abuse of prisoners, which wouldn't surprise me at all. And yet, of course, you'll never see much about that in the mainstream.
No, in the whole post 9/11 era and all the so-called scandals that were basically showed a policy that was drawn up deep inside of the bowels of the U.S. security establishment to escalate torture, to escalate sexual humiliation. And so you see the officers from the UAE directly, you know, firmly working within that paradigm. And it's just horrible.
All right. Well, let's move on to something a little less depressing, maybe. The Trump Follies. Wait a second. Okay, but first, this is just a good intercept backgrounder on Yemen, but we can pass over that. It's got too much information to cover, but it should be read as a background piece on Yemen.
And lots of good photographs that sort of like highlight the, you know, the reality of life in Yemen.
Yeah, these people are suffering so horribly due to the stupidity of the Obama administration in allowing the Saudis to go ahead with their insane plan to completely conquer Yemen in a nearly bloodless war that would last only 2 weeks. That was the apparent original claim that talked the Obama people into allowing the Saudis to do it. All right. Well, here we are in a trade war with China. At least that's what we're seeing in the mainstream. And it looks like it could be true. Trump is imposing a 25% tariff on $50 billion worth of Chinese exports. China has retaliated. And now the world is going into a quote-unquote trade war. This could have some pretty serious long-term geopolitical repercussions.
There could be. I mean, if there were to be a bridge towards a reestablishment of indigenous bottom-up self-sufficient economies, that'd be one thing. But there's no other indicators that that's actually what's going on here. There's no sense of that this administration is really trying to rebuild infrastructure, rebuild the soil, rebuild, replant forests, reestablish a strong farming community. So just in the midst of this, this just looks like, something that's going to benefit certain Russian oligarchs like Oleg Deripaska potentially.
Well, I think it actually could end up having beneficial effects in the long run because this is not really a global trade war. This is a U.S. versus the world trade war. The U.S. has slapped tariffs on Canada, the EU, India, as well as China, we already mentioned, and I think Turkey as well. And all of those countries have retaliated. So it's the U.S. versus most of the world. And what this will do is ultimately reduce U.S. influence in the world because the trade that's lost due to these sanctions, trade between the U.S. and these countries, is going to get replaced. These countries are going to trade with each other and with the rest of the world, not with the U.S. So the U.S. is going to lose trade. It will become more self-sufficient, which I guess is good in a certain respect. But the really good part is that this will massively reduce U.S. influence in the world. That's what the mainstream is afraid of. They're afraid that this, between Trump's craziness and this U.S. versus the world trade war, the whole world is going to throw up its hands and say, you know, let's not let the U.S. run the world anymore. The, you know, American century is now over. And I think that would be a good thing.
Yes, but then the question is who sort of steps into the vacuum, and we need total global reform. And I'm not seeing any sort of sense coming from the East, from China and Russia, that they're going to really put an end to this war on terror, which is really, you know, the amount of lives destroyed and the trillions and trillions of dollars of human resources that we're continuing to dump into something based on a treasonous lie that could be outed by any of these people. I'm sure Chinese intelligence has the goods. I'm sure Russian intelligence has the goods. And Russia stepped up into the fold directly after September 11th to support the war on terror. So I'm worried about this because I do believe the so-called American century was a imperial fraud. But meanwhile, we need actual real global reform, which includes the United States at the reform table.
Okay. Well, we'll discuss this in ongoing back and forths in future episodes, and we'll see where it all goes. But now let's move on to the big mainstream story of the week, and we'll whip through all of these slides pretty fast, maybe move back to one or two of them. 2,000 children have been taken away from their parents, and we have no idea where they are due to Trump's order that they need to start arresting people and separating families at the border instead of just sending them back. We have the UN human rights chief, Zayed Raad al-Hussein, calling it child abuse. And where are these kids? Well, some of them are in Casa Padre, a converted Walmart. 1,500 immigrant children held in a converted Walmart? This sounds like one of Jim Fetzer's darkest fantasies. You know, I think I owe Jim Fetzer lunch. He already bought me lunch because he lost the bet that Jade Helm was going to have us all locked up in Walmart within a couple of months. That was back years ago, and I'm not in Walmart yet, but unfortunately these kids are. So Walmart's as detention centers, actually, that turned out to be true. It's just that it's Trump that's doing it, and he's doing it to children.
Yeah, I mean, there's almost a double bind that's implied by this revelation of this abuse of children. And that is that you have the establishment sort of liberal media who was saying that this was all conspiracy theories about detention centers being set up in Walmarts and this type of thing. And then now you have the sort of the the right sort of patriot types who bought into the Trump thing, basically almost buying in to all of this because it's not
lock them up in Walmarts.
It's not the patriots being.
We love those detention centers and converted Walmarts, right?
As long as they're for Salvadorian children. And of course, what's being lost in the midst of this is why are people wanting to leave their homes in Central America? And really, we need to go deep into the political and economic context here, which of course is NAFTA. The rise of the Zapatista movement in relationship to NAFTA and basically the selling out and selling off of indigenous farming lands all throughout Mexico and Central America in the wake of NAFTA. And then, of course, the dirty wars. I mean, look, who else was more deeply involved than the head of the NRA, Oliver North, than in terms of training some of these death squads that ultimately became things like MS-13 that now menace people in the United States of America.
And Christians around the world who are supposed to be very kind, gentle, loving people with the Prince of Peace being their prophet, the turn the other cheek, apostle of love, are supposed to support these Walmart detention centers for little kids and family separations because, according to Jeff Sessions, Romans 13 says you better obey the laws of the government because God has ordained them for the purpose of order. So do anything the government tells you, you know, march people off to gas chambers if that's what they tell you to do, whatever, march them off to Walmarts. Okay, Jeff, that doesn't sound very Christian to me, but hey, I'm a Muslim. What do I know?
Is the ongoing 9/11 treason cover up the policy of God? Well, I guess it's the policy of your masters in Israel, Jeff Sessions. I don't know.
Indeed. And the government is, even though now they've apparently stopped the family separation, supposedly, they have no plan for trying to find those kids and reunite them with their parents. At least they say that 1,500 of these missing 2,000 kids are in a Walmart in Houston, Texas. But where are the other 500? When we're worries about the possibility of them being on Jeffrey Epstein's island or something like that, and the government is making no effort to reunite these families. I mean, this would be it should have been the first thing they did is reunite these families.
Yeah, it's the perfect situation for things like potential human traffickers to get involved. And who knows, there might have been some human trafficking over the border in relationship, but this really looks like just separating people from their parents. And this, of course, is in some way a little bit of a rupture from the Obama administration policy. But in more ways, it's a continuity of that in a sort of a doubling down on the detention of families who are basically just trying to find a better life. A lot of because, not completely, but a lot be based on U.S.-led policy in Central America over decades.
And this is, of course, this mass child abuse, which, of course, is going on on a vastly bigger scale all over in the Islamic world, where we're dropping bombs every 10 minutes, as we're going to be talking about Lee Camp's piece about that, with 30-plus million people killed and probably 100-plus million had their lives ruined, and a whole lot of those are children and families. All of this makes a certain percentage of those people are really going to hate the folks that did that to them. And so if you want to create a whole lot of people who really hate the United States, boy, you're doing a great job, Trump. In Houston, there's some pushback against this. This is from a Houston Alternative paper saying stop Trump's baby jail. It begins with a very kind of purple prose description of the Nazi Holocaust. And then says, this is high bullshit meant to preserve our innocence and image of ourselves as the eternal good guys. Wait a minute. No, that's not the official Holocaust narrative she's talking about. That's the whatever it is, something that we're telling ourselves about the baby jail in Houston. In any case, I don't know if the Houston baby jail is quite the Nazi Holocaust, whatever the Nazi Holocaust was. Maybe the Nazi Holocaust wasn't quite the Nazi Holocaust, but if I say that, I'll be a Holocaust denier. So I hereby profess that
you're already a Holocaust denier.
The Nazi Holocaust was the Nazi Holocaust. And the horrible things being done to children in the United States are another horrible issue. And we must call things by their proper names. Anyway, I guess it's good that people are upset about these kids, but maybe they should be upset about the 32 million Muslims murdered and the tens or hundreds of millions of kids who are going to grow up hideously traumatized and a bunch of them are going to want some payback. And with biological weapons that anybody can make in their basement, that payback isn't going to be that hard to get.
I definitely agree that this piece, it represents, it needs to be expanded in just the way that you described. And in terms of the how many young lives have been destroyed, and not just young, in relationship to this war of terror, and that this prescription that this author gives in terms of not allowing people to hold sort of any type of public justification opinions, I think is the type of thing that we could and should have been doing in relationship to the obvious 9/11 fraud and ongoing war of terror that the previous, slick homicidaire in chief Obama only ramped up from George W. Bush in terms of drone strikes, as we will see. And then also last thing is that the overall idea of the looting of the future of the people on the planet, and especially of the children, in relationship to the weaponization of all sectors in terms of air, water, food, electronic atmosphere, in relationship to the destruction of our resources and investing them in trillions and trillions of dollars and millions of capable young American men and women sent to based on treasonous lies, we need to rethink this whole situation. This whole sort of civilizational moment should be a reckoning with mass global child abuse, and we should rectify it.
Hear, hear. But while all this is going on, Trump is looking to outer space. What a visionary president. He's created the Space Force. Apparently, he's got some grays and some reptilians enlisting as officers. What do you think, Jeremy?
It's going so great with the U.S. dominating the other theaters of war. I don't know what this all means, but it's definitely not. I don't think it's a good sign. I don't think we need American domination of space. We need peaceful cooperation to explore space together. We need to actually de-weaponize space, the complete total denuclearization of space.
I'm trying to imagine Trump's conversation with the head of the Air Force when he proposes, because right now the Air Force runs the space program, right? And so Trump's saying, well, the space doesn't have any air. You can't be the Air Force in space. It's an airless environment. Well, maybe Trump actually doesn't know that. But anyway... The Air Force is pushing back.
I thought the Marines were not actually. I thought the Marines were a part of the Navy, but this says that the Marines are actually their own separate force. And it's interesting that the U.S. Air Force was set up to command space, and the U.S. Air Force was set up in at the same time as the National Security Act and the CIA came into being. So who knows? I don't know who's behind this Space Force move, but Mattis seems.
The grays and reptilians. So Trump is restocking this stocking this new Space Force with grays and reptilians, and
we need more Pleiadians. More Pleiadians.
Don't forget the Pleiadians. Yeah, we need some Pleiadians. Pleiadian rights, and he's also restocking Guantanamo, as well as the swamp, of course. But we know he's restocking the swamp. But he's also now going and trying to find people to put in Guantanamo. How about ISIS fighters? And they're going to put them in blue instead of orange, color coding the so-called terrorists. What a bunch of absurd theater. I mean, Bertolt Brecht and Ionesco and Samuel Beckett and people have nothing on the theater of terror.
And similar types of folks who are probably in support of the escalation of the Trump no tolerance immigration thing that's separating families are probably the same types of people that are still hoping that Trump's doing this in order to put Hillary Clinton and Obama into Guantanamo. I would point out that the treason, as you know, in terms of enforcing treason laws, as we need to do with the ongoing treasonous 9/11 cover-up, that is a severe matter. It's still a civil matter. Even if you wage war on the country, the definition of treason, it's still a civil matter that needs to be taken in Article 3, Section 3 courts. I mean, Article 3 courts, and not in some type of indefinite military detention. This is the markings of a collapsing empire to have endless sites where you detain people never charged.
Absolutely. And as much as I really wouldn't mind that much seeing the real 9/11 perpetrators locked up in indefinite military detention, I would much prefer them prosecuted under the Constitution and locked up in civilian jails. Well, moving on to Korea, Trump shows Kim a buddy movie featuring a big, tall, sociopathic, narcissist American president with a short, high energy little Asian guy. What a buddy movie! It's great, and we could be heroes just for one day. And he's got this David Bowie soundtrack going, and instead of In Berlin by the Wall, it's like In Seoul by the DMZ. And wow, how inspiring!
This summer, two rocket men, one with smaller hands than the other, will they make peace and win awards from dynamite manufacturer organizations?
That's right. The big guy has the little hands. The little guy has the big hands. This is the buddy movie to end all buddy movies. Anyway, it's actually, you know, this isn't the worst thing that Trump has done.
This is one of the better things. Yes.
That's right. So let's give credit where it's due. And I'm sure it was a great movie. I wonder who he got to produce it. Anyway, well, maybe it'll win an Oscar or something. Maybe we'll even get a year or two of peace out of it. Well, I guess we won't get a year or two of peace because Korea is only one issue. Trump's military drops a bomb every 12 minutes. I'm sorry, I said every 10 minutes. It's not nearly that bad. It's actually every 12 minutes, according to Lee Camp. Right on, Lee Camp. I love Lee Camp stuff. He's one of the hard-hitting truth tellers who also knows how to be funny occasionally. And if we don't laugh at this stuff, we go crazy. So shout out to Lee Camp.
Yeah, this is a very good, informative, and interesting article, and he showed the ramp up escalation of bomb dropping in relationship to W. Bush, to Obama, and now to Trump. Where are the real peaceful patriots who are going to speak out about this? Those that supported Trump. This is an escalation of a treasonous policy based on the ongoing 9/11 treasonous cover up. Let's hold everybody to account to the truth of this matter.
And one very important fact cited in Lee Camp's article is that according to the CIA's own documents, the people on the kill list who are the targets of these drone strikes account for only 2% of the deaths caused by the drone strikes. So they're killing 98% innocent people and 2% the people that they're trying to kill. Once again, traumatizing people and traumatizing children on this massive scale in a world where anybody, within a few years, anybody with a 3-digit IQ is going to be able to make a biological weapon that could target particular groups and probably whip it up in their basement. This is really stupid. It's time to stop trying to make people hate us. Moving on to the war on freedom, how about Austria's top Jewish group censoring Dhruba bin Wahad? And unfortunately, there's an update to this, just came in. The University of Vienna kowtowed to the Zionists, banned him. There's a story by Ali Abu Nima of Electronic Intifada about this. So it turns out, why is he banned? They say he's an evil anti-Semite because he pointed out that the silence of the black political elite is a consequence of the interference with political power by AIPAC and the Zionist lobby. So he has talked about Jewish power, and that makes him an evil racist. Yeah, right. And he can't speak at a university. These Zionists they think they completely own the universities. You can't even bring anybody on campus to speak if they haven't signed a loyalty pledge to Israel. It's obscene.
Yeah, it's the evisceration of any type of real society, especially when it's in this relationship to the academy and the shutting down of conversation and information. It sounds like a very important talk, actually, that he could have given in this background of understanding the domination of black understanding and political engagement in the United States in relationship to things like Jewish power and the Israel lobby are one of the key topics of our age. And so the students should have been allowed to have access to that.
That's right. And if they don't like what he says, they should bring a speaker to say something else and challenge him to a debate. Well, speaking of Zionist thought police on campus, how about this New York Post story? The student says that his crackpot professor pushed Holocaust denial as well as moon landing conspiracy theories and all sorts of other stuff. Once again, it turns out that the student is Jewish, going to Jewish groups. This is published in the New York Post, which is a Zionist Jewish, you know, Jewish major Jewish organizations newspaper. You know, we're seeing a massive overrepresentation of people who happen to be ethnically Jewish, tied into the Zionist lobby, who are policing these campuses. And this is the truth. Doesn't make me prejudiced to point out this obvious fact.
True.
Okay. Moving on to conspiracy theories, the Telegraph is going after the Amazon Prime for offering conspiracy theory films. But this is a complete fake news story. If you actually read the news story, it claims that the headline claims that Amazon's being criticized for offering conspiracy films, yet nothing in the news story shows anybody criticizing Amazon. It's the person who wrote the news story that's criticizing Amazon. This is BS. This is fake news. It's unbelievable what they get away with.
This article is me criticizing Amazon for selling films.
Yeah, right. Amazon has been criticized by me.
The main problem is that it's mainly Alex Jones films. That's actually what Amazon should be criticized for.
That's right. It's only Alex Jones and David Icke.
And for responding to the threats out of southern Israel by a teenager, an Israeli teenager, to Jewish community centers by stripping books about World War II history from Amazon. They should be criticized for that too.
I would think so. All right. Well, hey, a JFK story coming up here tonight on my radio show. Mitchell Mora, who has done all sorts of mainstream news producing in Los Angeles for the Los Angeles Fox TV networks and things like that. He has apparently done some work with some people on this new enhanced Zapruder film, and says that you can see that JFK's windshield being crystallized by bullets shot from the front in this new enhanced Zapruder film. So check it out and tune in tonight, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on revolution.radio.
That sounds very interesting. It does look like you can see it. And one thing I would just maybe bring up is that Abraham Zapruder, I believe, was a 33rd degree Scottish Rite Freemason in the local lodge in Dallas, which makes you wonder whether this was a snuff film of some sort.
Sure. Yeah. And it, you know, he immediately surrendered the film. It went to the top government corrupt film labs and was altered. They altered it just enough to be able to get away with claiming for years that this was a lone gunman kind of a thing. But it wasn't altered enough to hide the fact that this was obviously kind of a killing field with multiple gunmen, huge number of gunshots. Anyway, I'm sure you know this if you're watching False Flag Weekly News. So we'll move on to the revolution in Mexico. All right. Emilio Zapata. Well, no, it's a new revolution. This one is being led by Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who is running on an anti-Trump platform and an anti-institutional party corruption platform.
And AMLO, this is very, very interesting, and it looks like he's going to win. I've heard people are very worried about the security and that he travels around with not much security, and there are politicians running who've been killed just in the last days in Mexico. And he talks about taking on the power mafia, which sounds pretty good to me. And then some of his ideas are very interesting. We should consider some of them. Like what he wants to do is do a massive tree planting of fruit and nut trees, millions of trees in southern Mexico, so the campesinos don't have to move up into the big cities in Mexico City, but they can get jobs in planting tree forests that can produce food. And then he wants to create a rail line to get people to the down there into the city. So this is the kind of like infrastructure recreate the forest. We need to recreate our entire agriculture and tree-based agriculture. That's what young people could be doing and should be doing, rather than joining all of these drug gangs all throughout Central America. And of course, that's also what our armed forces should be learning in the United States of America, is how do you repopulate the deserts and the difficult wastelands of some of the areas where they are sent to, rather than bombing innocent people. We need to create a long-term tree crops, food crops that are based on trees, not on annual agriculture. So go on, AMLO. Let's see what you can get done.
All right. Restock the wastelands, not the swamp in D.C.
Yeah.
And I planted a mulberry tree 10 years ago, and this year for the first time getting a major harvest out of it by spreading plastic around it. So when the mulberries fall, it's really easy to collect them. Those mulberries are really good. So I urge people to do that. Although most of the food we're growing here is vegetables, 34x4 raised beds, eating lots of really good, healthy vegetables. That's why I have the energy to carry on this fight. And I urge everybody to get involved in some of this stuff. It's actually a nice break from reading about how the world is going to hell in a proverbial handbasket, which is pretty much what I do for a living. Anyway, moving on to Turkey. How about this? The New York Times is publishing hardcore anti-Erdogan propaganda, a puff piece by a friend of Muharrem İnce, the Kemalist, that is Atatürk-loving opposition. And you know, the more I see this kind of stuff in the New York Times, the more I like Erdogan. The Kemalists, I mean, these people worship Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, who is the world's worst cultural genocide perpetrator in all of human history. He actually abolished his own country's written language. People couldn't write in the script anymore. He ordered them to use a new script. That's as if Trump ordered all Americans to never again use English written in Roman script that we have now, and forced us to, from now on, do nothing but write English in Arabic script. Can you imagine the cultural genocide? We would lose everything that had ever been written, essentially, in our own history. That's what he did. And that's what this Muharrem İnce supports. So right on Erdogan. I mean, compared to the opposition, Erdogan actually looks pretty good.
I'm more of a neither nor. I know that's not a pragmatic position when you have to vote between two main candidates, but I am suspicious also of Erdogan. And I would actually maybe urge people to look back at like a figure like Erbakan, who said that Erdogan was potentially likely some type of actual Mossad asset of some sort. And you could sort of see it. And he sort of tweeted hard at Netanyahu, called him a war criminal, all of that. But when even, you know, these opposition parties proposed severing economic and political ties and reforming them with Israel in their own way, he stood them down. Erdogan has also gotten ADL awards. And so my sense is that maybe Turkey needs to look a little bit deeper back in its history at Erbakan, who believed in the idea of a unity amongst Muslim nations, an ecumenical Islamic approach, and then also an aligned struggle against Zionism. So I think that's more of the authentic Turkish political reform angle.
Oh, you're right, Jeremy. So maybe my lesser evil approach in this case should be jettisoned. I certainly don't vote for lesser evils here in the United States. So I shouldn't if I were in Turkey as well. I don't know. I'm not in Turkey. I'm here. we have a few more stories to get through. We have 3 minutes to get through a bunch of stories. So let's do them. We have Iraqi elections. That's right. Yeah. Muqtada Sadr won on May 12th, or his party won. And now suddenly ballot centers are burning, and then the opposition is trying to discredit his victory with this. I think they're probably the ones who burned the ballot centers, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, we got to watch out for this type of thing. It's like people start burning ballots. So even if we were to reform our entire election system and have hand-counted ballots, we might want to also have it be immediately sort of videotaped and put into We the People's cloud so that this kind of thing could not be done.
All right. And moving to Afghanistan, the other invasion target after the 9/11 false flag, we had an amazing truce. It's a little bit like the Christmas truce in World War I. Remember that? Well, this is the Eid al-Fitr truce, where breaking the fast, everybody breaks the fast together and stops shooting at each other. Not a bad idea, but guess who's blowing it up now? It's ISIS in Afghanistan. ISIS in Afghanistan, just like the so-called Pakistani Taliban. These are two completely phony groups created by the U.S. and its partners, Indian RAW and Israel, to blow up these countries. The target is to get Pakistan's nukes taken down and, of course, to keep the war going in Afghanistan forever so that the U.S. can stay there harvesting vast amounts of opium.
Amen to that. Okay.
Moving on to Smolensk, Poland. We have 2 minutes now. Jarosław Kaczynski, whose brother Lech Kaczynski died in a dubious plane crash in Smolensk several years ago, has reshaped his nation. And long story short here, he blames the Russians for killing his brother when in fact it was probably Operation Gladio that killed his brother to make him blame the Russians. So he is the subject of one of those Polish jokes that used to, you know, racistly and unkindly say Polish people are stupid. Well, if he hasn't stopped to think about the possibility that Gladio, not the Russians, killed his brother, then he's pretty much the butt of a Polish joke as far as I'm concerned.
And there's the picture of Donald Tusk, who sort of, you know, rose into prominence at that point and who's now sort of heading up the EU from Poland. The look on his face was very smug after this plane incident. And then the next story is very interesting too. This is an incredible. I want to read this more carefully, Kevin. This is an incredible analysis of all these different angles, including things like this sort of Saturnalian symbology surrounding it, and the sort of the analysis of potential thermobaric bombs being placed. So I want to read some more of this. It's very interesting analysis.
Yeah, it's basically a whole book. So you've got a free book on the web. Read this. It's available by PDF. Highly recommended backgrounder on Smolensk. Well, moving on to China. Well, actually moving all the way from China to the dark side of the moon. I hear Pink Floyd, Roger Waters playing in the background. China is going to colonize the dark side of the moon. Oh, no, they've gone to the dark side. Well, that's probably a good thing. It doesn't sound like they're trying to kill anybody. What do you think, Jeremy?
Tavistock or not, I appreciate, I love the Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon.
That is a great album.
And if you haven't done the sort of playing it together with the Wizard of Oz and started on the third lion roar, it's very, very interesting. It seems to work very well. And what's interesting about this is it definitely, you know, you're sort of like 50 years later, we're still talking about the moon, like whether we're going to go to the moon and stuff like that. It does make you wonder about the whole idea of the space program. What's going on? Is it in place to cover up some much deeper, darker, blacker space program? But one thing I notice here is what the Chinese are saying that they're going to bring is things like the eggs of silkworms. And if you think about the relationship of silkworms to mulberry trees, as you planted, Dr. Barrett, mulberry trees are the favorite inhabitation place for silkworms. And so that I like that model of a future of mulberry trees and silkworms rather than Trump's sort of American domination of Space Force.
Well, maybe when the new Silk Road stretches all the way up to the moon, we can all enjoy such products as moon silk and moon mulberries. I can't wait to eat some moon mulberries after this horrible period that we're going through now is over. But when will it be over? Who knows? And anyway, let's finish our show today with Donald Trump pardoning himself. This is the long-awaited story. He says, you know, he has every right to pardon himself. Giuliani says Trump can pardon himself for anything he ever did, everything he's thinking about doing, anything he might ever do. So I wrote a little piece about that, and check it out over at Veterans Today.
Truth Jihad. I really enjoyed this, play on the pardon. And just harkening back to the previous story, yes, I would love to see the Chinese bring in the future of mulberries and silkworms rather than Talpiot Israeli backdoor trap technology for the future of the Silk Road.
All right. Well, this has been False Flag Weekly News, the only weekly news show where you can get moon mulberries and moon silk on a regular basis. I'm Kevin Barrett with Jeremy Rothkuschel. We'll be back next week with as many interesting stories as we can find and then some, and try to get it all done in an hour. So thank you for bearing with us, and thank you for supporting the show. A huge shout out to all of our supporters. Shout out to Professor Anthony Hall, waging a struggle for truth and justice against all odds and against a really nasty adversary. So here's to Tony, and looking forward to getting back with you next week, Jeremy, and see y'all next week, viewers. It's good to be with you.
I mean.